Welcome to today's episode of Watchable. I'm your host, Sophia Ritter, and today I'm joined with...
Christy Ballou.
It's the show where we talk movies and TV.
Basically, if it's entertainment related, we got you covered.
Today, we're discussing relationship dynamics in the MCU. So today, I'm joined with my good friend, Christy. She gets to be here because she's one of my few friends who actually listens to my podcast, so go her.
Duh.
But before we dive into who Christy is and the MCU in general... Do you have a media pick of the week for us?
I do, yes. And I'm keeping up with this kind of the Marvel theme. My media pick of the week is animated show Marvel's Spider-Man. It's on Disney+. It's more loyal to the comics, but it's basically about Peter Parker's origin story and his friendships with Harry Osborn and everything that happens with the Green Goblin. I really like the show because the main focus is on the friendships in the show. I'm not a very romance. I don't like a romance. I'm not a romance person. And there's none of that in there so far that I have seen.
I'm stunned you don't like relationships, Christy. Geez. Okay.
I know. Gosh.
I appreciate you keeping to a theme. I wish I would do that more. But my media pick of the week is quite different audience than yours. I recently watched Inception for the first time. And I'm always... leery of cult classic films because people hype them up so much that it makes me annoyed by their existence. But I watched this one and I actually really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, I actually recommend you watching it because it's one of those movies that makes you think for a few days. And we love that around here.
It's been years, though. Me and one of my best friends, we rented it. And I remember I wasn't that wild about it, but it's one of those I need to see it again because I feel like I would enjoy it more the second time because it does make you think and you do miss stuff. I just haven't done that.
Yeah, it's a long movie. It's like 3 hours, so I totally understand that one.
Yeah, not many 3-hour movies hold my attention. That might be more of a me problem than a movie problem.
All right, so me and Christy met as being major Marvel fans on the internet.
Yes.
Between the period of, I think it was between the period of Infinity War and Endgame where everyone was speculating over everything with Marvel. So why don't you kind of just tell us, why do you think like Marvel and its characters resonate with you?
It's weird to say, but it kind of has that they kind of have that relatability factor. Despite the fact that I'm not a billionaire, I relate a lot with Tony Stark and that I hit with his struggles and with his mental health. That's one of the reasons why Iron Man 3 is one of my favorite MCU movies. And it's something I can connect. And another good example is Peter Parker. I mean, I've been a fan of Spider-Man since the Tobey Maguire movies, but he's so awkward. He doesn't quite know what he's doing. And I feel that even now in my late 20s, even now, I still relate to that, like to that awkwardness on some scale. But him constantly trying to do everything that he can that's right. And then falling flat on his face, like it humanizes him, and that's something that you want to see. I don't want to see watch a superhero who's perfect at absolutely everything. So watching Marvel kind of brings almost that comfort of you can kind of see the human side past their superpowers or past whatever witty joke they come up with. You get to see that, and that's something that I can connect to.
I kind of have a similar background, as in Peter Parker drew me in. I am not as old of a fan as you are. I was one of those annoying movie people who are like, superhero movies are ruining cinema and crap, and I hate those people with a passion, because I was like headset, because I had seen like 2 superhero movies. And I didn't even know there was a difference between Marvel and DC. I was that person. Like, I had seen Wonder Woman and Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange is the worst movie possible for, like, a new person in superheroes.
I liked Doctor Strange, but I do agree that was not a good movie. That's not a good one to start out with.
No,
in Marvel.
It was
that
so
is not
confusing.
A good one. Yeah,
especially for some person who is, like, bougie and, like, thinks they're too good for stupid superhero movies. But anyway, I went into Spider-Man Homecoming expecting to hate it, and I wanted to hate it, and I couldn't, because I just instantly fell in love with all the relationships in that movie, because they're all done so well. The friendships, the romance isn't done great in that movie, but everything else is really sweet in that movie, and it kind of made me fall into the full Marvel loop after I saw that movie.
And I agree with that. Honestly, that movie is, I think, a really good example of kind of what inspired this episode that of talking about the relationships and stuff. You have the relationship with Peter and Ned and Peter and May and Peter and Tony. Like, it's not all about the romance, well, or the lack thereof. Let's be real. There was not a romance. It played a little bit of everything in it that you don't see a whole lot.
Let's start out with our friendships. Captain America, the first Avenger, brought you into the MCU. So what is your take on the Bucky and Steve friendship and then following up with Sam later on?
I really liked the friendship, especially in like the first Avenger. I liked how loyal Bucky was throughout the first Avenger. It's a shame, really, because I did watch the movies out of order. Like, I watched Civil War for Winter Soldier, and I should not have done that. I really liked their friendship for what it was, and the whole, like, Bucky redemption arc was really cool. I just couldn't really find myself getting that invested, and I couldn't really figure out why. Like, by the time he was brought back in, it felt like detached, really. Which, I mean, he's supposed to, of course, because of everything he's gone through. But their friendship in the first Avenger, I absolutely loved it. It was great. But to me, I just didn't think it transferred as well as this franchise progressed. I really enjoyed Steve's friendship with Sam a lot more. It's just...
I did, too.
The way they became friends, it felt natural. It was just two guys hanging out, and then they became teammates and friends, and how loyal Sam has been throughout the whole thing. And I had a more emotional connection to that, I think, than with Steve and Bucky, despite what a lot of people might say or think.
No, I'm kind of with you, especially because I watched the movies completely in the wrong order, to the point where, like, I think I saw the first Captain America last in the Captain America trilogy. But I was kind of a Bucky disbeliever, and I'm not going to say much because I know you're behind in the new series, but they are really exploring some interesting themes in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
And I've heard good things.
Sorry if this spoils a little bit for you, but
that's all right.
They are, one of the lines from, I think, like, the second episode was, if Steve was, like, wrong about that, then he was wrong about me. And, like, they're really reflecting on, like, really dark stuff. And they're also calling out what I want to talk about next, which is a really popular trope in the Marvel franchise, which includes Tony and Rhodey, Peter and Ned, Sam and Steve. And that is the minority best friend, which is basically Marvel having one minority character and being like, see, we're inclusive, but then not having enough actual main characters.
It happens such a stupid amount. Like, so even much. Thor with Valkyrie, Carol with Maria, the list goes on, and it really bothers me. I'm not saying that Marvel is racist. It's just the trope is getting old really fast, and I want to see something different.
It just keeps happening.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that Black Panther did as well as it did, because that really broke the barrier, if you will, of breaking that trope. And it was such a fantastic movie, too. I love the friendships, but that trope, it's like... It doesn't, annoying. It's annoying. It doesn't give the minorities the spotlight that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that needs to change.
Like, don't get me wrong, it's better than having an all-white cast, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They can't keep using it as an excuse to not have main characters... people of color, because they're like, well, look at us, we're so diverse. Like, well, who's your leading man in every single movie?
Yeah, oh, we're so diverse with one Black person in the whole movie. Like, it's honestly disgusting how they think that, oh, we're so inclusive and diverse. And it's like the whole thing of LGBT.
There's a lot of queer baiting in Marvel.
yeah, absolutely. I don't remember how I saw it, but I remember there was some kind of announcement saying there was going to be an LGBT character in Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. But
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, the guy was in there all of 2 minutes.
It was just a Russo brother in therapy session.
Yeah.
You can't say my partner and I and act like you're inclusive. You're an extra. Yeah. You're a glorified extra.
It's like that bit in, like, the last Star Wars movie where they said there was going to be an LGBT couple, and you see the couple for 2 seconds. Maybe.
Enough that it could be cut out in international markets. That's what it was.
Exactly. And while I get it on a cinema front that, like, okay, you're doing global, there's countries that aren't as progressive as we are, which is really sad, but it's true. So I get that you want to do just enough so you could cut it out on that front, but also, like, come on.
Like, but also, you guys have, I don't know, their risk have mostly paid off in the last few years.
Yeah.
And they're at a position where they can make kind of statements. I don't know. They seem to be making a few statements in terms of, like, calling out race issues in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier,
which is good. Yes.
But I don't know how much they're going to actually progress that. So I'll have to kind of wait till I'm finished with the series to kind of give my verdict on that.
One of the things I really liked about WandaVision was how Monica Rambeau was so, like, upfront.
Loved she wasn't Monica Rambeau.
Yeah, she was fantastic. She was one of my favorite parts about the show. Yes. I'm so excited, like, with the ending, how it's gonna kind of allude. So I'm like, oh, she's gonna be in the second Captain Marvel. But I love how she was, like, the showrunner. She wasn't just off to the side. I mean, even Jimmy, I love Jimmy Batista's, like, he was even
three,
like,
dynamic though worked so well together. And it's what the future of Marvel should look like. That's like an excellent example of what friendship should look like in the MCU.
Yeah, exactly. And I love how that, like, these three random people were just kind of thrown together and, like, okay, I guess we're gonna work together now, and it could not have worked out any better.
It was an excellent example of how they have a lot of minority characters, they just need to give them the screen time, you know.
Exactly.
And they're talented actors, too.
Yeah, that's another thing, too, that gets me. Like, they keep getting pushed aside. I'm really happy to see Sam, like, finally in the spotlight. I've been wanting to see Sam in the spotlight forever. Contrary to what a lot of people think, I'm happy that he became Captain America, not Bucky. A lot of people thought Bucky should have deserved it, and I disagree. I thought Sam was a good choice.
No, I 100% agree with you. It would have been pretty problematic if it was Bucky. Also, because he's, like, an assassin in the MCU universe. Like, I'm pretty sure the average American in the MCU universe wouldn't be happy if this known assassin who's barely been pardoned is running around with Cap's shield.
Did they ever explain, like, how he just got
it in the new show quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying not to tell you everything about it, and it's hard.
I knew I should have binged the first few episodes before I did this.
Oh, you're good. You're busy. Know. It's life.
Yeah, life, man.
I do kind of want to talk about some of the big relationships in the Marvel universe, romantic wise. We have Tony and Pepper, and then we have Steve and Peggy. Personally, I do not care at all for Steve and Peggy. I'm gonna get hate for this, but, like, I'm sorry.
Nah.
The Peggy worship is a little weird. I don't get it. I hated the end of Endgame. Like, I like Endgame as a movie. It was a good movie. I'm not one of those people who want to cancel it. But the end of Endgame was so stupid.
I got so angry. I watched it in the theaters. I had my sister on one side of me and my best friend on the other. And they were both like, oh, Steve.
Yeah, same. I was with a bunch of freaking Cap fans.
Yeah. I'm like, no, Steve just ruined Peggy's life. Are you kidding me?
She was happy.
She was happy. She had moved on. And this is
weird.
And this is one of the things I really dislike about Cap. See, a lot of people hate on Tony because he's an a-hole. He is. He is. And he owns it. And he does not care.
But he's also caring.
and doesn't pretend
he's something he's not.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I like about Tony. But Cap, on the other hand, he thinks he's the greatest thing. He thinks he's this great, awesome hero. But he's an a-hole. I hated the ending of Endgame too. Sorry, I didn't mean to get mad about that. So
I agree, clearly. Okay, but from a narrative standpoint, kind of going into Tony and Pepper now, because we both kind of established we don't care much about Steve and Peggy. From a narrative standpoint, it was just kind of frustrating that, like, Tony seemed more deserving. He had established his place, and it seemed more right that he got to, like, have a happy ending. But then they, like, gave it to Steve, and it didn't feel well balanced.
Tony had his happy ending, and it just got yanked out from under him. And it's also, his relationship with Pepper is the most consistent one in the franchise.
And it's the most interesting one, because they give us by far the most. Like, we follow that relationship for 10 years.
10 years. years. Yeah. And then they just yanked it out from under us. And it took watching Endgame the second time in theaters for me to kind of see, okay, I could see why they went the route that they did. Began with Tony and like the era would end with Tony. I can see it. It just killed me that like they did all that to him just so Steve could have his one friggin' dance.
Oh my God. And I keep like feel like I have to justify myself by keep saying I like Endgame, but I do. And I do think like it was a good movie as like an Iron Man like fanatic, a little weirdly into Iron Man. I didn't love how they treated that character. But they created so many loopholes with how they did Steve. Like it doesn't make it. There's so they keep kind of calling it out in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is great.
But now I'm really sorry. Just
like a glaring hole, and no one understands what the hell happened, really. All right, let's move into family relationships in MCU and like found family, because this is my favorite genre, and I want to make sure we have enough time to properly dissect it. So I'm going to launch in with my favorite of these found family trope, one that I might have inflated a little bit over time, but that is the relationship between Peter Parker and Tony Stark. I think this relationship is just so interesting because, first of all, not only does Peter's character strongly reflect Tony, but also they're very similar characters, yet his like instincts are completely different than Tony, and so putting them together makes them so interesting. And their on-screen chemistry is just undeniably insanely entertaining to watch. Their characters are just so, I don't know how to say it, but they're very quirky and they just jam well together. And honestly, like putting in a more father-like role for Tony's character was one of the best things I think Marvel did. It kind of reinvented him from Civil War going on into the final stretch of his arc. And it really gave him like a clear purpose and role in the MCU. So I think giving him that like father-like role in that movie really did a lot for his character and made him a lot more likable and made his ending a lot more satisfying with him and Morgan.
Absolutely. I think what I like about it is that it was so unexpected, which is weird to say because they have a close relationship in the comics too, which I'm not a comics person. It's just from what I've seen. I could be a comics person, but that's a rabbit hole I would never be able to get out of if I were to.
It's just a lot. I don't even know where to start. It's that kind of situation.
Exactly. But bringing that into MCU, it was so unexpected. I just explained, I didn't even know Spider-Man was in the MCU until I watched Civil War. And you just didn't expect, first of all, for Tony to consider recruiting a kid. That alone is like, Tony, what are you doing? This kid's like 10. Stop it. But you see the dynamic of like the innocence of Peter and his just willingness to do good. And then you have Tony who's seen it all. And it's like you kind of get this notion of like he wants to protect the kid because he doesn't want, you know, Peter to turn into him or to see what he's seen. That's what I've always gotten from it. But then you have Peter who idolizes him and wants to be him and whatnot. So you have that. So there's like both the external and the internal conflicts there of Peter constantly wanting to please Tony. And it is like a parental role in a way, because, you know, as kids, you want to please your parents and, you know, you want to do the right thing. You want to do right by your parents and stuff. And I see that's what Peter wants to do. I get this notion that he's scared in a way of what Peter's doing. I feel like if Tony really had it his way, he would not want Peter to do what he's doing. But
he tried to send him back in Infinity War. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like he knows he doesn't want the kid to get into it. He still wants him to be a kid for as long as he can. But, you know, then the kid's just so stubborn that he sticks to the side of the ship and gets in anyway.
But I think that's kind of why the ending of Homecoming is like bittersweet and kind of perfect. Because like you were saying, it kind of exemplifies like Peter learning all the things that Tony was trying to force on him. And then Tony, after kind of caving to what Peter wanted, being like, oh, yeah, like, you should be a kid.
I especially love at the end of Homecoming, because that whole bit with Peter when it's like, is this a test? Because that is such like a parental move right there. The parents would totally put that as a test, but it wasn't.
I know. Because he's not a dad, so he doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. He's not a parent. He doesn't know what the heck he's doing. So... So I thought that part
he's like just, so used to like teachers and crap that he's like, this is a test.
The standardized testing's gotten to him. That's such another cool part of their dynamic. It's what makes them so similar but so opposite at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kind of drew me in more than anything.
As well as found family, they also have some great like actual family relationships inside of Marvel. One of them, yes, that I think is really interesting is within the Black Panther franchise with T'Challa and Shuri. Obviously, yeah, we don't know like the future of that, but I'm talking on like the existence. The father-son role of T'Challa, like taking on the mantle, was really interesting perspective. And also just Shuri in general is such a great character, and I hope she gets more attention going forward. But her and T'Challa together and Black Panther were really sweet, and they had some really, yep, defining moments, which really helped both characters develop, which is always a good sign of a relation of a solid fictional relationship. So
yeah,
what are your thoughts on those two?
I completely agree. I also love that they actually acted like siblings.
It felt natural.
Yeah, exactly. That feels like such a silly thing to say, but they do, like they're bickering and, mm-hmm, they say sarcastic remarks. Like, it felt so natural, and they're so comfortable around each other despite T'Challa, he runs the land pretty much. Like, mm-hmm, that kind of humanizes him, and you can tell too that Shuri really looks up to him. Like, in my perfect world, I would love for Shuri to eventually become Black Panther. I don't know
they said they're not replacing T'Challa, like they're not recasting him, so I don't know what they're doing for Black Panther 2, but
yeah, I don't
hopefully they give, because it's important to have female characters, it's also important to have Black men in Marvel, like it just is. Yeah. So it's like a hard balance to say what they should do, but hopefully I'm not that qualified. I'm this white girl from Nebraska, but I'm sure they have the right people looking at what their next step is.
As a white girl from North Carolina, I'm right there with you.
Exactly. It's like, I don't want to overstep here, but
yeah.
Okay. Another thing though, on the character of Shuri, her and Peter could be so great together. Like,
yes.
We need, agreed, to see a movie with those two together. It'd be hilarious.
I really want a Young Avengers movie, but I've also been wanting a female Avengers movie forever, and I don't know if we're going to get that either, but...
Yeah, we can dream.
Yeah, we can dream. But yeah, I think they would too. They're very similar in like their quirkiness and, mm-hmm, their intelligence. And
I think Shuri would call out Peter.
I think she would too.
For just like not thinking anything through. Like,
yeah.
She would, exactly, call him out for that. Like the glasses thing.
Yeah. Far from home. She would talk to him just like she talked to Bruce and Infinity War.
Exactly.
Like, why didn't she just do that? which on the one hand, that bit annoyed me. But on the other hand, I'm like, yeah. First, why didn't you do that?
For real, though. Is there any other relationship you want to go over before I ask the watchable question of the week?
I do want to touch on one of my favorite friendships in the MCU. I do love Tony and Rhodey because they are so opposite.
They're great together.
It's like the opposites attract thing. I love Rhodey as a character because, mm-hmm, Rhodey really is the voice of the audience, and like he says what all of us are thinking.
Exactly.
He has such a dry sense of humor, and I also have a dry sense of humor, so I resonate a lot with that, and I feel like that's what makes me love Rhodey. But I love that Rhodey isn't afraid to call Tony out. I love their whole dynamic, and that's just something I wanted to touch on. They're one of my favorites because they're opposites. The whole opposite attract, mm-hmm, thing really is a true statement.
And yeah. Rhodey has that presence of like being there at the right times. That is really good to see in friendship. It's one of those things that I feel like we actually didn't get quite enough Rhodey time. Maybe I'm just like thinking too much about it, but I feel like we could have had more screen time for him because like when he shows up, he's great.
I agree as well. Like even in Endgame, he didn't have a lot of screen time. Like
when he did, it was great.
Yeah, like, and you barely saw him. Like you barely saw him before Tony died, which is something that makes me sad. Mm-hmm. I was hoping, not that I think this is going to happen. I have not watched Sam and Bucky's show, but I was hoping, like, hey, they're like in the same circles with Rhodey. Rhodey can make an appearance. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm not looking at you like that.
Did I just guess something?
No.
Oh, I'm excited.
You should watch the show, girl.
I need to watch the show. I just guess something. I'm really bad at guessing, so this makes me very happy.
I didn't mean to give you something, and it's not that big of a moment, but it happens. I wanted to touch on Guardians of the Galaxy just because that is an excellent example of found family. Because all of them become much better people when they're together, and they all learn a lot from each other. And there's so many interesting dynamics within their own group, especially like Groot and Rocket are fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just love Rocket in general. So
yes, that was another like parental relationship that I wanted to give like an honorable mention to. I just love the way Rocket like took care of Groot as an adult, and then just took it in stride when he turned back into baby Groot. It just, it worked. It somehow, it worked. It's a raccoon in a tree, but it worked so well. Like, like in Infinity War, when Groot died in the snap, you felt for Rocket. I'm like, how? What?
Guardians remains one of the best, like, unexpected surprises that's come out of the MCU.
Yeah, I agree. And I love both parts one and two, because sometimes the sequels aren't as good, but I love the Guardians sequel, too. It was so great.
All right, to kind of close up the show, I want to ask you this version of Watchful this week, because we're not doing a typical show. We're kind of talking about everything and anything Marvel. So with that being the nature of this week, pitch me your dream Marvel project you wish you could see.
Dream Marvel project.
Mm-hmm. Movie, Disney Plus show, whatever you want.
Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I have dreamt of a Disney Plus show about Tony and Peter.
Oh my gosh. You changed my answer.
Yeah. Like, two years passed between Homecoming and Infinity War. The possibilities of what could have happened during those 2 years are endless. That is probably my dream project. Of course, I really want, like I said before, a female Avengers movie is something I really want. Those are my top two dream projects. Those are the ones off the top of my head.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on the Spider-Man themed and Iron Man themed show. I'd especially just like to see like a casual Spider-Man show where he's just dealing with very small neighborhood problems, and it's more of like a comedy style. I think that is just amazing idea, in my opinion. I would love to see that kind of thing.
Could you imagine almost like a variety show, like a sketch?
Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine style comedy with Spider-Man.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
That is,
yes.
That's it. That's my dream Marvel project right there.
Just imagine that crossover. It's in Brooklyn.
Disney just has to buy the rest of the media industry, and we're there. They used to technically cross over when Brooklyn Nine-Nine was owned. Well, it was always owned by Universal, but it was partially owned by 21st Century Fox. So, Anyway, so yeah, Brooklyn Nine-Nine styled Spider-Man themed show, my dream Marvel project. Make it happen, people.
I would watch that.
So, if you enjoyed our very in-depth discussion of all things Marvel today, make sure you check out our next episode. We'll be rejoined with our normal host, Bethy Hernandez. She has been obsessed with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and we're gonna dive deep into that. So yeah, we'll be diving deep into the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, so make sure you check that out. And thanks for listening to this episode of Watchable.
This podcast is edited by Sophia. Our music is from purpleplanet.com, and our graphic is by Maria Hernandez.
If you enjoy listening, leave us a review on Apple Podcast. It really helps us out.
Have an idea on what we should review next? Send us a message on Instagram or Twitter at Watchable Media.
Join us next time when we discuss the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Now go enjoy your day.